the coolest thing was we had thought that the interest in this patent would cease after expiration of the knockout patents for Fucosyl transferase 8, but interestingly, it didn't. And the reason is that there were some licensing conflicts with the CRISPR-Cas technology, and people, licensees, weren't able to differentiate which kind of company to take a license from.
Hey, smart biotech scientists, welcome back. We are in the middle of an exciting conversation on glycoengineering, and my guest today is Henning von Horsten, who is a professor of industrial bioengineering at the University of Applied Sciences in Berlin, Germany. And if you haven't listened to part one yet, please go back, where we talk about why glycosylation matters and the impact glycosylation has on the functionality of molecules. And now coming up in part two, he's going to tell an exciting story how he and his collaborators invented a smart way of modulating antibody-dependent cell-mediated cytotoxicity. And we are talking about the analysis of glycans. So stay tuned. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohlman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenge as you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics and market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. Now, there is one more thing we need to discuss. It's the analytical side, because we need to make sure that we are producing on a consistent basis. But before we do that, I have one more question, because you're an innovator and I got intrigued. I read that you're one of the key inventors of a smart way of modulating antibody-dependent cell-mediated cytotoxicity. So can you tell us in a nutshell what that technology is about?
Yeah, I can tell the story. This is a very nice milestone in my life, I would say. Really cool. And I have to attribute a lot of credit to my former boss, Volker Sandig. He's the chief scientific officer at ProBiogen. And at my time there, he and I, we were like sparring partners. We would always come up with ideas, and then the other one would shoot the idea down. And we were like, for some time, tackling the problem of how could we get rid of the fucose, because many clients were addressing us and saying, hey, could you make us an antibody that lacks fucose? And then all we had to say is, yeah, potentially we can, but yeah, we would have to take a license from Genentech and from BioVar and Kyowa Hakko and la la la. They have all the patents on knocking out the fucosyl transferase 8. So if you pay the license, we can make the the cell line. And that was a bit frustrating for us. And we thought, maybe we should have a look at the patent landscape and try to find a design around, find something that we can use and we have freedom to operate. So then I took a look at it and came back to Volker and he said, hey, we could potentially knock out the GMD. Then we have no internal GDPL fucose sugar nucleotide. So the de novo synthesis from the cell itself is blocked when we block the activity of GMD, an enzyme that uses GDP D-mannose as a substrate and turns it into GDPL fucose in the end. So if we block this enzyme out, and there's another enzyme, the FX enzyme, that's also involved. If we take knockouts of these, we are not getting any internal fucose. And if we have a fucose devoid medium, the shunt pathway is also blocked out. And then if there is no GDPL fucose, then it can't be attached. So we were very intrigued. And then he said, oh, do a patent search. Let's check if that has been patented. I think some patents were made by Amgen, another by Genentech, another one by Gillette. There were others who had like already patented these enzymes also. there was no way around. And then Volker and I, we basically said, yeah, can't we just leaving out Fucose from the medium is an easy no-brainer, but how can we kill the de novo synthesis pathway? What about taking an intermediate substrate that's coming out and removing it by another enzyme? And then I went on a search and thought, oh, I have this enzyme from Pseudomonas aeruginosa. It uses it and turns it into GDPL rhamnose, which is a dead-end product. It's used in bacteria, but has no point in any animal cell. It will just accumulate in the cytosol, and then we don't worry about it. And then all of a sudden, we said, oh, let's order the construct. We had it codon-optimized, synthesized, shipped over to Germany. And then we handed this over to our PhD student, said, here, go ahead, clone it, make it, express it. And then I think the cell line engineering group did the work, and then she just went and brought the material to Charité and measured the sugar composition. And then all of a sudden she came back, there's something wrong. All the peaks are moved. And then Volker and I, we looked at each other and said, yeah, 146 Dalton. And the funny part is it was lacking completely. It wasn't just depleted, which we had anticipated, but it was completely gone. And the reason is it turned out later that the GDPL rhamnose is a sugar nucleotide that is an inhibitor for GDP mannose dehydrogenase. And so it kills its own synthesis. This is why we also weren't able to find accumulated rhamnose in the cytosol. We looked for it by HPEC part and other methods and never found it. It's basically a suicide substrate for its own synthesis. The cool thing is we were also able to tweak the amount of fucose by adding through the shunt pathway. So now you can tweak a little amount of fucose, and you're free to use. The coolest thing was we had thought that the interest in this patent would cease after expiration of the knockout patents for fucosyl transferase 8, but interestingly, it didn't. And the reason is that there were some licensing conflicts with the CRISPR-Cas technology, and people, licensees, weren't able to differentiate which kind of company take a license from. So they ended up saying, oh, why not use something that we just can use without using any CRISPR. And then they just use the knock-in of Probiogen. And I think out of the 10 revenue strongest pharma companies in the world, 8 of them took a license. And the only two that didn't is GSK, which is in the vaccines field. And the other is Fosun, which is the Chinese reseller of large drugs. They are not in the business of innovation biologics. No? So all the others took a license. Yeah.
Wow, that's quite an innovation success story and a business success story. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Volker is amazing. You need to talk to him also. He is an amazing scientist and inspiration for me. Yeah, he's a very, very brilliant guy.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Let's make it happen. That's good.
Yeah, he came up even with some other cool technologies. You have to have a look at it. He invented directed luck. A transposase technology, and also lentiride, a manufacturing technology for scaled manufacturing of lentivirus. Have a look at it.
I will.
He's cool. You should have an interview with him. He is a brilliant wizard.
That's good. Let's make it happen. Let's talk about the last part of glycosylation, because we talked about the importance of glycans. We talked about how we can modulate them in order to change the functionality of proteins. But now we need to talk about the analytics, because we need to see actually what we are changing. And you said that you did this analysis and fucosylation peak was gone. I mean, completely. So we need excellent analytics to see that. So first of all, how do we as scientists determine the critical quality attributes?
Yeah, this is a bit of a challenge. So far, it's quite easy to look at N-glycans. The majority of N-glycans, particularly human N-glycans, are easily cleavable by an enzyme that is ubiquitously functional. It's called PNGASF, and it releases the intact glycans. They can then be labeled with a fluorescent label and separated by HPLC and quantified by peak area. So this is a perfect setting for an analytical chemist to get the glycans off, and they can even be quantified from area under the peak. And relative fluorescence intensity for the peaks is also then direct comparator for quantitation. So that works quite well. It's a very well-established technology, but the challenge is it requires a lot of skill and training to get there, because first of all, it involves the handling of highly toxic chemicals, cyanoborohydride, for example, Now there's others, less toxic things like picolin boron for labeling and as a labeling reductant. But then other dyes are needed and they need to be removed from the labeled glycans. And the removal also is intensive in loss, causing losses of the labeled glycan samples. So the workflow is intricate, complicated, and expensive by involving enzymes, labeling techniques, chemicals, and cleanup kits, which are devised to get rid of impurities at different stages. First of all, clean up the glycans from the enzyme reaction, and then clean up the labeled glycans from the excess label, and wow. And my group in HTW, we are trying to tackle these issues and to come up with workflows which are more streamlined and straightforward.
Yeah. And what would you advise, for instance, to a smaller company that doesn't necessarily have the expertise or doesn't want to acquire all the skill sets? Are there easier methods a company can use to get decent results? Do we need to use these complicated assays at all, or just in some cases? Or what are your thoughts on that?
The need for very intricate assays is definitely there. In academia, for example, cancer research, glycans have turned out to be involved with cancer, and they could be used as a biomarker for cancer. And in such cases, definitely we would need the most intricate analytics possible. Here in Germany, also some very nice companies that have advanced technology. They use capillary electrophoresis for separating the glycans without any diffusion limitations. And they get very, very good separations and excellent peak recognition. So that is definitely important in an academic field, particularly when it comes to the search for biomarkers and then identifying them in the first place. In biomanufacturing, where we have to deal with less complexity, for example, an antibody, it's known what kind of dominant structures it does have. The structural compartment where the glycan is located is kind of confined. So the complexity of the glycan is also somewhat limited. And it may, to identify the major quality attributes, it may be enough to have less resolution, but have a higher throughput. For those kind of things, we have developed a gel-based system to separate glycans simultaneously on a polyacrylamide gel. And we can separate them like 25 samples in one row, which means on a total ceramic plate, we can separate 100 samples, and in an entire tower, 400 samples potentially. And then within a runtime of 1.5 hours. So this would be nice for high throughput data generation, which in turn could be interesting for artificial intelligence approaches, where it is interesting to get these patterns and then learn from these patterns, rather than from detailed analysis of like very, very rare abundant peaks. I think there's a need for both things, like the academic research and biomarker discovery field, where it is about really accurate and highly resolved analytics. And then there is high throughput artificial intelligence driven data generation. And I think that is where we are headed.
Yeah, that's probably also would enable a more frequent sampling in a production process to monitor and potentially even control your manufacturing process and to add, for instance, some additives or change certain culture parameters to potentially tweak your glycosylation profile. Yeah.
And then it would be nice to really get the readouts from hundreds of experiments simultaneously with in-run precision. So there's not too much operator influence on each individual measurement.
Now, Henning, I have another question, because we talked about the exciting stuff that's going on in the glycosylation. I would be wondering, where do you see this going, or what are the remaining challenges for glycan engineering?
As I said, it's my conviction that the biggest grail in biomanufacturing is homogeneity of the glycans. To get to a homogeneous product, because with a homogeneous product, we can control an attribute that has influence on efficacy. So there has to be some drive towards getting homogenized material. And I think the challenge is to synthesize these glycans chemically, to make them available in large quantities, like, for example, by enzymatic assisted synthesis. There's ongoing work in the US, but also here in Germany, to get enzyme reactors in a consecutive fashion, like flow chemistry assisted enzyme reactions, which allow us to make chemicals in a consecutive way and assemble glycans in vitro and ideally in large scale. And once they are available, then transglycosylation, for example, would be an option to get optimized and then hook up glycans to yeast synthesized material. Another thing is in yeast, one big problem that had been identified for that is holding back yeast as a production host is an unfortunate ability to like skip some glycan sites, which results in a lower N-glycan site occupancy. So if we have to tackle that from the cellular point of view and the synthetic glycan availability on the other side, then merging this could drive the industry forward and bring down costs of goods for homogenic glycosylated biologic modalities. I think that is a big challenge on both ends. So the first, the cell line engineering for the yeast cells, and then also the chemical ability to synthesize complex glycans.
Wow. Henning, we have covered a lot of ground today. So can you tell the smart biotech scientists what the most important takeaway is from our discussion?
I would say glycans matter. I think this is the biggest takeaway. And we have to worry about glycans everywhere. Glycans are part of vaccines. I have just recently read a paper from a research group at Janssen where they devised a vaccine construct that was targeted at producing a vaccine for the respiratory syncytial virus G protein, which was a difficult target to address. And they have built a construct with the Lumasine synthase, which is a self-assembling virus-like particle. The enzyme builds a virus-like particle. It's crazy. But as a fusion with RSVG, it makes an immunogenic vaccine. And it needed glycosylation sites to like really make this vaccine soluble, accessible, and then elicit a strong immune response in mice. And they showed that very beautifully. And yeah, I think glycans really matter in many contexts, be it vaccines, be it ATMPs, be it biologic modalities. Glycan research matters. Glycans matter. They are really important and they should not be overlooked. They will soon come back to bite those who are not aware of them.
Henning, where can people connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I can contact Bern on LinkedIn. And also, I have my website on HTW Berlin. An email also by email. People can contact me by email, horsten@htw-berlin.de. So I'm open for connections.
Wonderful. Yes, please do reach out to Henning. I will leave all the information down in the show notes. And thank you so much, Henning, for sharing your passion. It's been a huge pleasure to talk about glycosylation with you. Thank you so much. All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.